tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Some financial decisions are about today, but the smartest ones, oh, those are about tomorrow and the day after that. Wealth isn't just what you earn. I'm pretty sure you've heard this, right? It's how you allocate what you have based on where you are, where you're going, and who you want to become along the way. Whether you're just starting out in your 20s, building a family in your 30s, navigating complexities in your 40s, or thinking legacy in your 60s, how you position your assets can change everything. Tonight, we decode asset allocation strategies for different life stages. And to help us make sense of it all is a man who knows the art and the science of financial navigation. He's here to give us strategies, but also act as a guide. He's helped many move from chaos to clarity and from guesswork to game plan. Tich Magonese joins us this evening to help you see your money not just as numbers, but as a tool to match your season, serve your goals, and secure your future. Tish, hello.
Hey, good evening. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I am well. Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to meet with you guys, have a chat, and good evening to your listeners too.
Always a fun time. We grow so much whenever we have a conversation with you. Let's start with this. What is asset allocation, and why does it matter more than just picking the right investment?
Well, asset allocation is a fancy way of saying how do you distribute. What's a simple way to put it? Because I think a huge part of this whole process is just trying to demystify everything. I don't want people to hear asset allocation and suddenly just decide this is not for me, it's for somebody else. But yeah, it there's an old English saying that says don't put all your eggs in one basket. Mm-hmm. And when you think of it in that sense, it's basically to say how do you manage the risk of loss?
Yeah.
So if you take the adage of the basket, if the basket falls and all your eggs are in that basket, then it means you've got no eggs left, right? So when we start talking about asset allocation, we're basically saying don't put all your eggs in one basket. Try and make sure that in the event of something else happening, you have a fallback or you have something else that may not suffer the same fate as something else.
Mm.
So when we start talking about assets, we then start thinking to ourselves, do you only own land or do you only own cars or do you only own houses or do you have all your money sitting in cash or is all your money sitting in stocks or in government bonds and bills or treasury paper? And you kind of want to make those decisions because not all your money is for one thing, essentially, and so you want to protect it, you want to grow it, you want to save it for a rainy day. There are different sort of instruments that will help you to do that. So when we are talking about allocation, we are basically saying, how do you create different baskets in which to put all your eggs so that if one basket should fall, you don't lose all your eggs?
And how do we think about it? Do we think about it as all these baskets have different eggs that I can tap into at every point, at every stage in my life? Or do you just keep accumulating these baskets at every stage in your life? Do you get what I mean? Like, is it an array that you sort out now and you tap into whenever you get to 30, 20 or whatever? Or do you get to 30 and you have new baskets, 40 new baskets, like that?
So it's the correct answer is yes and no.
Okay.
Because I think there are certain things that are lifetime, it require almost like lifetime planning. You know, when you start talking about retirement, people think, you know, the best thing to do when you're planning for your retirement is to start planning for your retirement as soon as you start working. And, you know, I think further on, you know, in this discussion, we'll talk about timing the market and timing the market in order to maximize returns. So there are certain things that are long term and there are certain things that are short term. So if I'm You know, if I've got a savings account because I want to go on holiday in December and I keep putting money aside every month, you know, and we can call that a basket. It obviously means by the time I get to January, there's probably nothing left in that basket because, well, I've had the holiday in December. But if I'm sitting there and thinking to myself, hey, you know, I'm going to retire one day and I don't want to be a financial burden to anybody. I want to have peace of mind after I've retired. You know, that's a basket that you're putting money into over 30 to 40 years, which is the average sort of lifetime that people work. You know, you start in your 20s and retirement age in the conventional sense of the word is around 60. So that's a basket that literally you are contributing to all through your working life. And then if it's a holiday basket, it's a basket that you'll access, you know, it's a few months down the road. So there will be different baskets for different things all through your life, because if you're saving money to build a house at some point, you know, the house is built. Do you still need that basket anymore? Maybe if you want to build another house.
And the time you were alluding to is right now. And it refers to the phrase that we've often heard, time in the market beats timing the markets. And I'd love to hear from you. How does that principle influence how we allocate assets at different life stages?
Okay, so the whole principle behind time in the market versus timing in the market takes us to one of my favorite topics around money, which is where I always start. And I think each time we have a conversation, I always allude to this. So there's probably someone out there saying I sound like a broken record. But this is the reality. You know, when we start talking about money, you can't talk about money without talking about what we call money habits.
This is true.
Which is basically how you relate to your money and how you behave with your money. And basically your psychology of money, which is absolutely important. And when we talk about time in the market or timing the market, we are now talking about money habits, to say you are better off investing over a period of time, riding out whatever shockwaves that you've, you know, that may come in your investing or your savings journey, as opposed to trying to find that sweet spot in the market when you invest and you get the maximum sort of returns. So those things do happen as life goes, but they are a lot less certain. So if you have established a money, a saving habit, and you know you consistently save your money, you know, all the research out there just says to us, you are better off than that one guy who's going to wait for, maybe it's a stock that is suddenly so cheap and no one else knows that this stock is cheap and you're the only person who knows this vital piece of information, and you buy a truckload of these shares that wake up one morning and suddenly they've, you know, quadrupled, hundredfold, you know, increase in value. That's unlikely to happen. You know, it's almost akin to gambling. So you are more likely to be worse off. But the truth also is, if you don't have the discipline of time in the market, which is consistently saving and putting money aside, you are also very unlikely to be sitting on a lump sum of money that enables you to time the market and actually make outsized returns, right? Because that also assumes that you're sitting on this pile of cash and bump into this wonderful opportunity that gives you all these magnificent returns. But without the discipline of time in the market, which speaks to consistently saving, you know, what you can over a longer period and therefore guaranteeing a stronger likelihood of better returns, you won't be able to do that without having had some money aside.
Yeah, and you know, since the other presidents there over the seas in those United States has been in office, timing the markets would be such a detrimental thing to want to focus on or approach to have, because things have been very, very volatile. Because
I think volatile is a good word. Very, 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 very apt and a great example of, you know, if you're sitting there thinking you want to time the market, you know, this may not be quite the time to do it. But I think countless research has shown that over a decent horizon, you are better off just investing slowly and consistently.
Now, I'd love to hear from you as well. What would a healthy, realistic asset allocation look like for someone in their 20s or early 30s just starting out? And I know that 20s and 30s might be different life stages, but people, some people pop, I don't know how to say it in English, but some people get it together in their 20s and others in their 30s. And so we have to just accommodate the range at which people start out and have their careers going for them, or maybe even have money to invest in the assets that they can then allocate. What priorities should they focus on in the time that they're starting out?
Okay, I'm going to go to broken record as an opening statement. Get the right money habits in place early.
Yeah.
And in your 20s and in your 30s is a great time to get the right habits.
It's such a fantastic time.
And some of those habits are, for people that probably haven't heard me singing this old song before, some of those habits, there are three main ones, firstly, don't spend all the money you make, which is start saving. Secondly is put some money aside every single month, which is kind of like related to the first one, but you could literally just be living hand to mouth, right?
Yeah.
So you're not spending all your money. You're meeting your bills and your obligations. So that may look like you're doing well. And then the third one is put the money to work, right? Find a way to invest it. So even if it's as simple as just a savings account that doesn't probably pay the best sort of interest, but ultimately your money is working for you. So in your 20s and in your 30s, you want to put those habits in place. You want to establish those habits. If I make $100 every single month, I'm not going to spend $100, or I'm not even going to spend $120 because access to credit can allow you to do that. So in the denomination to which I belong to, we believe in tithe. You make your $100, pay your $10 tithe or 10 rand tithe. Off the back of that, then take maybe another 10 or 20 rand or $20, put it aside somewhere where it's actually working and it's earning money for you. Those habits are very, very important. And then another one which is really, really important, especially as you start out, is preserve the machine that makes money, right? So if you had if you ran a bakery and you had an oven, right? And you came to a bakery in the morning and the supervisor tells you that, the oven is not sounding right, it's sounding funny, you would absolutely call in a mechanic or a technician or whoever it is, or an engineer, to look at that oven and make sure it functions properly. Our bodies are that engine, So before you even start talking about money, early on in your life, one of the habits you want to do is, a lot of us can only work because our bodies are in a good state of health or they are functioning properly. So you also want to invest in your health, very early in life, get the right habits so that you can take care of your body, but also invest in your ability to be productive. So things like critical life cover and health cover become very, very important, because when you take them out when you're younger, it costs you a lot less, but they also guarantee you that you have the ability to bounce back from setbacks. Should you meet those. So part of your money very early on, put it into a life policy of some sort, preserve your ability to continue to be productive. And then also start thinking about your retirement, because this is where the adage of time in the market actually, works really, really well for you. You start early, then you're in the market for longer, and you're potentially looking at, better returns over the long term. A lot of us, wait to get into physical assets like property, if that is what we want to get into, because we are waiting for our dream home, to be able to afford the dream home. But I think time and again, one of the things that matters is find a way to get into the game as early as you can, and you can always, with increased capability, upgrade if you need to do that. But you want to do that at a time when you're starting off, because it also helps you with the habit of, making your money work for you, putting it in all the right places. And a lot of it will then now be dependent on what you want to do. Sit down, make a plan. If you're thinking, I don't want to get married for the near future, I just want to focus on myself, on my studies, or whatever it is, have some sort of a plan. We don't know what that plan is,
yeah.
And you know, it's a call to a wide range of people. But at the very least, have some sort of a plan. Find a financial planner. Sit down with them. Tell them the dreams. Tell them what you want to do. There are people that just want to travel. That's all they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I know a guy who's got. He's got a travel fund, and you know, every single month, and for the last odd 20 years he's been working, he puts money aside, and
wow.
Every year he goes on this crazy holiday that everybody wonders how he affords it.
Yeah.
But that's part of his plan, right? So, you know, the actual asset allocation, in you know, as to whether you put it in either this asset or that asset, is really quite bespoke.
Yeah.
But the starting point is, what's your plan? What do you want to do?
Mm-hmm.
So money habits in place very early, especially in your 20s, in your 30s, it may be getting a little late, but it's not too late. You know, the best time to start was yesterday. The
yeah,
next best time is today.
Like now.
You know, have a plan. And I think a lot of us just don't, we live, we just, you know, we just carry on. And that's probably the biggest failing that that we have.
Mm. And you know, you're the first person ever who's reframed or painted a picture to me of the relationship you have with a financial planner. How you positioned it was, tell them the dream, let them know what their aspirations are, and you can dream together and plan and work at it together. Whenever people pitch the idea of a financial planner, you think it's a tedious task that will force you into discipline, but it's literally just somebody who's there to help enable the dreams you have financially. And for me, that shifted something in me, and that made it even more attractive to have that partner for your money and your finances.
Yeah, that's very true, and it's something that we've spoken about, you know, a few times, you know, in these conversations where we say, you know, we have these conversations to spark thought and to spark debate.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, you know, this wouldn't constitute as financial advice, if you wanted to call it that. I think what we're trying to achieve is to say, let's plant the seed and then, you know, actually act on it. And one of those things that we continue to say is, get a financial advisor. Sit down with a good one. It's kind of like trying to find a mate if you're dating. You know, you may meet somebody who you don't necessarily agree with, but because this is a financial partner, they're not just a financial advisor. They walk the journey with you. You may kiss a few frogs before you find a prince, and accept that, because the benefit of having a good, decent financial planner will help you to look, you know, at your finances in a different light. Really good ones will help you to plan. Really good ones will help you to understand what you know all the different options that are out there. So, you know, we're talking about asset allocation now. A good financial planner will listen to your hopes and your dreams, put a plan together. You know, you sign up for it together. Ultimately, you're not going to do anything that you have not agreed to do. But they are trained, and you know, South Africa is unique in that, you know, you actually have an Institute of Financial Planning. I think there's a university somewhere in the Free State that actually gives accreditation. So you can actually be able to access the services of a certified financial planner to give you comfort. There's also the fallacy that we have that, you know, we can manage our money, and some of us can. That's really, really cool. But, you know, fixing a leaking tap is nothing more than changing a valve on it. But we call a plumber because we recognize that this is not our area of expertise.
Yep.
But I think, you know, because of the emotional relationship with money and the mentality of scarcity around it, when we hold it, we become very territorial, if that's the word, very proprietary, you know, my money, my decisions. But a financial planner is not taking your money. You know, it's they're making decisions with you. They're helping you.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you still get to decide where you put your money. They're going to put it anywhere without your sign off, without your say so, because the money is still yours.
Yeah.
It's still in your account. You're just getting help.
I love that perspective. Now, we've spoken to the 20s and the 30-year-olds, but when one reaches their 40s and their 50s, the truth is their responsibilities peak. There are kids, there's property, like you mentioned earlier, career shifts. At this point, people start getting antsy and they want to either have their own thing or start their own firms. So how should they then adjust their allocation to reflect the season of complexity that they're in versus somebody who's just starting out in their 20s and 30s?
Okay, so here's the thing, right? You know, we said the best time to start is yesterday. The next best time is today.
Yeah.
Which kind of says, well, it's never too late to do the right thing, right? Mm. But it's also saying to us, it's never too early to do the right thing. Mm. And if you have taken that step of bringing a financial planner on board with you in your 20s and your 30s, they would have had a conversation with you about what wants to happen in your 40s and your 50s. Because remember, this is a continuum, right? Yeah. You're not living life in phases. It's just one life, and you're at different ages in that life. Mm-hmm. And you also find that in as much as responsibilities and obligations peak in your 30s and 40s, you know, late 30s, early 40s for most people.
Yeah.
The reality is, so does your earning potential.
This is true.
You know, because now you've kind of gone to school. Mm. You've got your first degree for
His
most
experience.
People. If you're fortunate enough to do that, some people have gone. They've done their postgrad.
Yeah.
They've got some decent amount of work experience under their belt. You know, they're getting promoted at work. You know, and these things are coming through. So you almost have a convergence, right, of your earning capacity coming. You know, coming through, as well as the demands on that money. But what you then find is, if you do not have a financial plan, in most instances, you find yourself earning more money, but you are worse off.
Hmm.
And why is that? Because you don't have the right money habits. So you're making more money, but you are spending more money. So the money habits of don't spend all you make just means you make a million and you spend a million. Mm. You're worse off than a guy that makes 100 and keeps 500.
Sure.
And keeps 50.
50.
Because you are down to zero. Mm. He's got 50. He's way better than you. The fact that you earn a million and he earns 100. Yeah, maybe you live in a fancier house, but it's like seconds away from disaster, because before you know it, you have one life event or a calamity of some sort. You can't pay the house. You know, the bank is taking it away. Mm. At that point, the guy who can save 500 a month and, you know, is staying in his one bedroom apartment, he's way better off than you, coming out of that mansion off a repossession. So I think, while yes, you may need to make different decisions, the disciplines that you carry with you in your 20s and your 30s will give you the biggest rewards in your 40s and 50s when you're making a lot more money, because where you've taught yourself the discipline of saving 10% or 20% on 100, you're now saving 10% or 20% on 1,000. You know, so it's important to understand how those shifts will come based on your life stage, because I suppose when you're older, and you've probably, like to the example we gave earlier, where you've taken out things like critical illness cover in your early 20s and your early 30s, it's definitely going to cost you a lot less in your 40s and 50s than it will cost you when you just want to pick it up in your 40s or your 50s.
So
your greatest dividend during those times of peak earning potential will be paid by the disciplines that you set in place earlier in your working life. Otherwise, you're just going to create $1 million problems, because now you've got $1 million salary. If you don't have the right disciplines in place, you're also at that point. I think it's important to know that you're also looking at traditionally close to retirement, but you're also dealing with the double whammy of, you know, retirement ages aren't exactly moving, and we've had a conversation previously when we spoke about, you know, the new world and how retirement is really not a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you've also got to realize that you are earning a little less in your 20s. You got your peak in your 40s or your 50s, but because of advances in medicine and science, you're probably going to live for 20 or 30 years after the official sort of retirement age. So you are again in that space where you want to be saving a lot more than you are spending. You want to be taking decisions around, I can afford a 5-bedroom house, but these children live in another 5 or 10 years from now. And now I've got this 5-bedroom house.
Yeah, and you'll
Who's
be an
sleeping in
empty
it? How
nester.
much does it cost me to maintain it?
Yeah.
So maybe I'm not going to buy that house on the hill. I'm going to stay in this house, but with the full understanding that maybe I need to buy something smaller for when I'm not making as much money and I don't have all this money to maintain this home. But again, it just comes back to that broken record. Get the right money habits in place. The dividends start coming through now as you get older.
Sure, as you were saying that, I was getting a bit sad because it sounds like the person is winding down. And I don't like the idea of winding down your life.
Well, not really. It's just
House
a
on the
different stage,
hill.
right? You're active in different ways. You can contribute in different ways. You've got experience, you've got a good head on your shoulders, you are healthy. And I think you just contribute in a different way. You're not necessarily winding down, but you want to make it possible for you to contribute, by making sure you've made the right decisions through the process.
Can I contribute in the house on a hill?
You can, because remember, with all these things, there's relativity, right?
Yeah.
If I've been making $20 million a year for the last, 10, 15 years of my
Yeah.
working life, I'm sure with the right disciplines, I can definitely retire in a house on the hill. But you also want to be prudent. Is it absolutely
Oh,
necessary?
for
For some people, it
sure.
is. Affordability, I think, is very, very relative, which is why, when we have these conversations, I never really want to talk in absolutes and in numbers. Things like, get the right money habits in place. They apply across the spectrum, regardless of how much you make. So the house on the hill is actually just not the problem. We're just, probably using it here to illustrate the point that
Illustrate the
says
point.
you want to be able to say, how do I match my impending expenditure with the income that's coming in? Because you're kind of going back again to that money habit of don't spend all the money you're making. So if you've invested in these assets and they are making some money for you even after this official sort of retirement, you can't then take 80% of that money and use it because you want to maintain this house on the hill and it's just the two of you. That doesn't look like it makes sense.
It doesn't at all. Now, I love the fact that you are taking this or approaching it from first principles, right? It always goes back to the mindsets and getting the things right from the onset, and that'll put you in good stead at every stage of your life. But I do want you to get like quite nitty-gritty, especially when we talk about people post 60, because that's retirement age, right? For the majority of people who perhaps don't think the way we do. So what does smart asset allocation look like there? And I'm even as I'm asking this question, I'm realizing that the assumption I'm making is there are actually assets to allocate, because we might find that this isn't altogether true.
So if I were to go back, right? Because I think that the whole thing with asset allocation is this assumption of cash, which is then put into different things in order to preserve it or in order to meet, demands or requirements further down the road. Then there are different forms of assets. So I think the underlying asset is cash. And even cash itself, you can't dissipate all of it. I mean, you can't take all your money. And I think this is where the case of allocation comes. So you can't take all your money and, I suppose, buy houses because you can't eat houses, right? So you're going to need some cash, to pay bills, put fuel in your car, pay the electricity bills. But you may also want to be able to preserve your earning capacity. So you find an asset that gives you some sort of income, whether it's a rent or property, whether it's assets. I mean, call it not assets, stocks or bills or bonds that create an income for you. So this is what you are trying to do. And then those choices, are on the basis of what you want to do. And what sort of risk is associated with each of the different assets. So we know if you invest in stocks and you wake up one morning and the CEO is attending a Coldplay concert
You didn't. Of
with the
HR.
director of HR and you wake up and nobody wants to keep the shares anymore. We know you could lose your money,
Yeah.
but if the CEO is faithful to his one and only,
Yes,
and the
and
value
they've
of
gone
those
to the
shares continues to
GC and
go
come
up,
back.
then it's a great investment, right?
Yeah.
So, and if all your investment was in that share, then you can suddenly find yourself in the
Jeez.
water.
Yeah.
So that's where the whole allocation thing comes. It's about risk, it's about appetite, it's about what you're trying to do. And it's about how risk averse you are. So
Yeah.
that's the whole thinking around assets. You're looking at a time horizon, you're looking at your risk appetite, and then you're also looking at what you want to be able to use the money for. And what you want to use the money for determines how accessible you want your investment to be. So a
Yeah.
house may be a great investment, but if you suddenly find yourself, needing a couple of million rand, if that's the value of your house, you're kind of not going to get that couple of million rand in 2 days. You're going to list your property. It's going to be on show days for the next 2 or 3 months. Then, someone's going to decide they want to buy it. Then, there needs to be a transfer, and that process, goes to the deeds office, and the money sits in trust somewhere. And maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 months down the road, you actually see your money. So was the house a great investment? Sure, it was, right? But if you were putting the money in there because you needed to pull it out quickly, if you wanted to go somewhere on holiday, well, you need to be able to wait 6 or 7 months before you can do that. So maybe in that case, you just want to put your money in a notice deposit, in a notice deposit. Maybe you can access it in 7 days. Maybe you can access it on call as and whenever you need it. So because of the purpose for which you need the money, what may be considered a poor investment would actually be a good investment, because for you it's still preserving your money, and you know that you can access it as and when you need it.
What's starting to get clearer and clearer to me as you're speaking is that what asset allocation really is what we see happening right now in view of your whole life, or maybe the destination you'd love for your life to take. So, and I think I understand now the value of even sitting with a financial planner or financial advisor to say, this is the direction we're this is where we're headed. And this is the direction we're taking. And based on that, this is what we'll need at every point in this journey to get us there. So if you don't even have, and of course, life happens. You can never predict how things are going to go. And you never know for certain how long you're going to live and how the quality of that life will be. But I think what I'm understanding is the premise here is this is where we're going, and this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to apportion our assets across the journey to get us there, because we understand exactly where we're going.
Precisely. And I think, cash is the first asset. So literally all the other things that you're doing is you're apportioning cash. That's what you're doing. You're saying, I've got $100. I want to take this $100 and put it for transport. Then I want to take this $100. I mean, this $10 for transport of my 100, this 10 for my type, this 10 for my offering. I've got 70 left. I think this 70, I'm going to take a 20, because maybe Junior is going to go to creche in another 3 or 4 years, and we don't want to struggle every month to pay his creche fees. So maybe we take this 20, we put it aside. It's for his creche. It's going to earn interest somewhere. So we now know that we're ahead. So every time we need to pay his fees, we just go to this account or this basket, and we know that the money is sitting in there. So you've got the underlying asset, which is cash, which you then take out of physical cash and you put it into other different aspects, or other different assets, other different investments
Stores
on
of
the basis of
value.
what you want to do. And the plan is important. And this is one of the reasons why a financial advisor helps you, because they are a dispassionate observer with some technical know-how, who will then take instructions from you and on that basis say, so this is our financial plan. This is where we want to go. This is where we want to get to. This is how much we are earning. And on that basis, this is how we're going to allocate this cash into the house, into the car, into bills and bonds, whatever it is that speaks to the plan that we have. So as a first step, you've got to have a plan. And we can call the plan that hated word budget. That's what it is.
Let's call it a plan. Let's call it a plan.
Exactly. It's exactly what it is.
Yeah. And with that, the truth is life isn't linear, right? People lose their jobs, they get divorced, some inherit money if it's not really a scam that you're getting in your email, and others just start over for whatever reason, whether they feel like it or they're forced by other extenuating circumstances to start over. So how does one then recalibrate this assets allocation when life doesn't go according to the plan we're talking about?
Okay, so there are some things in there that you can plan for and some things that you can't plan for. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody ever gets married to divorce. So that may be a difficult one to sit with your wife and say, so in case we get divorced, you know, I'm not going to put all my money into the joint accounts, right? Because she's probably going to be like, okay, are you signaling there? Is that a shot across the goals? You know, what are you planning? You know, what's her name? You know, what? Or, you know, I don't know, but I don't think you'd get a great reception. Mm. So, I think you've got to accept that. You know, there are some things that, you know, are probably not part of a financial plan. Mm. I know that in instances where there are vast sums of wealth passed through generations, you know, people go to great lengths to protect, you know, these nominal fortunes from, you know, some husband or wife coming through and walking away with everything. Yeah. I guess that's as much planning as they can.
Yeah.
But there are things like, you know, calamities such as ill health or accidents that you can have some sort of protection against through, you know, various insurance policies. So be pragmatic about that and take out the protections that you can take out. You know, this is one of the things that a financial advisor will also be able to help you with. You know, a good financial advisor will point you in the direction of saying, how do you protect the main asset that actually earns the income that we are planning for? And that's your ability to work, you know, that's your body, that's your health. So a good financial advisor will definitely have a conversation with you around your health. It's great that you're making all this money, but if you're drinking yourself into a stupor every night and you can't wake up, you probably lose your job. So your ability to make that money is neither here nor there if you can't keep a job. You know, that's put it bluntly, you know, it's a reality. I still would go back to what you have rightly referred to as first principles, because if you are not spending all the money you make, you're putting some aside and you're putting that money to work. In the event of life happening as it does, you have a place to start.
You have a place to start.
Yes. Yeah. You've got some money saved up. You've got a plan that you were sticking to. It's a lot easier to unwind positions because life has happened than it is to start thinking, so how am I going to make money? So some of those things may well be, you know, you've been putting money aside, but you've got money in a property. Yeah. Maybe you need to downsize now your property.
Yeah.
That's a much better place to be in to say, well, we've got a house. 100%. We probably can't afford to keep it anymore. Mm. We're going to let it go. We're going to get something smaller.
Mm.
So those first principles, that's why I say they pay dividends, and the dividends get higher and higher as you get older because they always give you a place to start. Mm. So, you know, in the event, unfortunate event that, you know, you are divorced as well and you need to split the assets, there's assets to split if you had the right principles, those if you subscribe to those first principles.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you could well find yourself getting divorced and there's really nothing to split because, well, you were spending all the money you were making, you didn't put the money to work, you didn't save any money aside, so, you know, everybody just kind of walks away with their backpack.
Yeah.
Hopefully not.
And principles are principles, right? I think the beauty is when you get yourself accustomed to doing the right thing, the only difference now will be the base. At first, you were doing the right things with more, and now you're just starting from scratch or maybe from little. The base has changed, but the principles still hold. And because they are good in their nature, you can still get back up because you know to do the right thing and you do it.
That's exactly correct. Yeah. And also the important point is, you know, those first principles mean you don't start from rock bottom.
100%.
And I think that's why when you said also in your 20s and your 30s, you know, what are you concentrating on? And I said, well, you've got to go back to first principles. Mm. You've got to just not spend all the money you make, put some money aside and make the money, you know, make the money work for you. That's probably the biggest thing you could do for yourself in your 20s and your 30s. So if you're out there and you're listening and you're in your 20s and in your 30s, it's a great time to be able to do that, because you also don't have, you know, for most people, responsibilities like you're married or you've got children, or, you know, some people are fortunate enough to even be able to still stay at home.
Yeah.
Right. And some guys then take that opportunity to go crazy every month and spend all the money they make. But it's also a great opportunity to then start getting the right habits in place with that safety net, right? To say, well, I don't have to pay rent because I live here, but I can start contributing, and you start learning the responsibility of contributing. I can save some of my money because, well, I go to work with dad and he drops me off, right? Somebody's budgeting rent of a similar, and the rent and transport of a similar salary as yours, but you are taking the route that says, okay, let me establish the discipline of saying, I don't pay rent, but doesn't mean I need to spend it all. And when you then do get to that point of having to pay rent, you've got a starting point. You've got that bit for a deposit. You've got the saving habit in place. Your money can get to go so much further.
Tish, what are some of the mistakes, common mistakes you've seen or heard of people make when it comes to allocating their assets, and how can they avoid them?
The first one is, you know, understand what you're investing in. I think there's a bit of a herd mentality where, you know, everybody says, oh, well, you can buy yourself a fleet of trucks and have it carry coal out in Mpumalanga. And it's probably a great idea. But I don't know the first thing about trucks. I don't know where Mpumalanga is. And trucks cost a heck of a lot of money to buy as well. So I think the first thing is, you know, we invest in things that we don't understand in. We don't tap into advice, you know, so we kind of loop back again to a first principle. Get yourself a financial advisor, sit down with them, explain to them what you want to do, what you want to achieve, and help them make you, and let them help you make the right choices. The other mistake that we make, I think, is we follow, well, we've spoken about herd mentality and just following trends, really. But trends by their nature come and go, you know, and your life is not a trend, you know. Your life is around for the next 50, 60 years if you're lucky. So bear that in mind as well. The other mistake that people make is they then put all the eggs in one basket. So it could be a really good investment. It may be really, really nice, but, you know, if everything is sitting in one place, you're not managing risk. So some people ignore risk completely. And one of the reasons why we do asset allocation and put our cash in different things is actually to manage risk. But if you then put everything in one place, you've pooled all that risk. So if something goes wrong, you are literally in the water. So you want to avoid that. So I think those are the biggest mistakes. You know, we don't get advice. We follow trends, and then we put everything in one basket. We don't manage risk.
And you know, I'm looking at the time, But anyway, I think I do want to end the conversation here, right? But before I let you go, there is something else that I want to ask you that is going to be very, I think it's going to anchor our conversation. So as you wait to hear me ask it, I do want you to have that frame in mind that it's the thing that will anchor our conversation, right? And I guess what I'm taking out of this conversation, and I hope everybody really got, is that the point here, or what you gave us basically, is a masterclass in matching our money with our milestones. That's really it. The base is cash. What are the milestones? Let's do the matching. And not only did you give us strategies, but you also gave us permission to plan with purpose. That is a thing that you've been intent on from the very beginning, to invest with intention, not this thing of mass hysteria saying, let's do this and we all do it, but also building wealth that reflects our season and not our salary. Because if our salary is our guide, then we will go back to where we started.
Don't adjust the stomach to fit the mouth. kind of Like, you know, we call it lifestyle creep, right? The more I make, the more I spend. So ultimately, somebody making half my money is living a much better life because, well, you know, now I just create $1 million problems.
Sure. So yes, before I let you go, I want us to create in this moment just, or I want us to create a moment of courage, clarity, and conviction, right? And here's a question I do want to ask you. If there's one bold move you think someone should make this week alone to shift their finances from stuck perhaps to strategic, what would that be? And can I just say, you're not allowed to say mindset. You're not allowed to say habits. You're not allowed to take us back to first principles. Let's say we've got that on lock. What is a one bold move that one can make this very week to get them back on track if they were and lost their way, but on track if they were still unsure what to do?
Make a plan and see a financial advisor.
Please.
Make a plan and identify a financial advisor. So scripture says, you know, write down the vision and make it
Make
clear
it
to the people, right?
plain.
There's something in there. Write it down, read it back to yourself, you know, maybe put it aside, go back to it after a couple of days. You'll probably find you need to change it again. Do that maybe a couple more times until you're actually clear what the plan is. And it doesn't have to be a complicated plan. This is not a research thesis for a PhD, right? And it could just be as simple as saying, I do not want to be a financial burden to anybody in my retirement. And take that to a financial advisor and tell him, right, listen, I don't want to be a financial burden to anybody in my retirement. I want to be self-sufficient. And that alone is enough for him to sit with you and make a plan. You've got to be prepared to be honest as well. I think, you know, some of those conversations can be a bit embarrassing to tell somebody, listen, I
This
make
is
a
what I
million rand a
did. I
month,
blew
but
it.
I need to borrow money for petrol for my brother to get to the next payday. But you've got to have that open, frank, candid conversation. So one thing for me is make a plan. Write it down. What's the plan? What do you want to achieve? And then take that plan to somebody who's knowledgeable, a financial advisor. You can check their credentials. You can check their certification. Quite a few, you know, financial organizations actually employ these people on a full-time basis. Some of them work for themselves, and have a conversation. You know, what the conversation we have here, you know, doesn't constitute financial
No,
advice.
it's not
What it does,
bespoke.
yeah, what it does is it just says to you, start thinking about these things if you were not.
Yeah, it's a call to action, if anything, but the action is dependent on what you will agree on with that
Yes,
advisor. And sometimes, man,
precisely.
all it takes is one bold move to start a whole new financial chapter, hey? We get stuck in our own, we get stuck in our ruts and in our own mess for so long that we never really move.
So if, when you put it like that, you know, I would also say that as human beings, we know when we are in trouble. Sometimes we are not as courageous as we need to be to do what we need to do to get out of trouble, and we just think this thing is going to blow away. But I think that's a strategic mistake. I hope that doesn't sound too like too much like business school. But one of my business school professors has a thing that he loves to say. He says strategic problems are like health problems. The longer you let them, you leave them unattended, the worse they get,
Oh.
right? So if your cholesterol is high,
Yeah.
and the longer you take to do something to make it better, it just gets worse.
It doesn't matter how
So
much you've
yes,
adjusted.
precisely. So it's the same thing with our finances as well. If we know that our finances are not in a good state, the longer we take before we do something about them, the worse they'll be if we ever then get to that place where we're saying we need to do something about them. You know, another way to look at it is if you're in a hole, stop digging.
Stop digging.
The hole's only going to get, deeper, and
Yeah.
it's going to take you so much more energy and time or strength to get out. So maybe that's one thing, is to say stop, evaluate, write down the plan, write down the vision, and then take action to actually bring it to life. Re-examine, see a financial advisor. I always say that, because these conversations are great, but our situations are so unique that we need to go to a level of detail for you to actually see the results. That's important.
Sure. Oh man, I love having conversations with you because they're always so real. They're so raw, but absolutely relevant. So thank you so much again for your time and your wisdom. This was absolutely lovely.
Thank you, Mpumi. It's a pleasure. Like I always say, I don't consider myself an expert. I just
Yeah.
think that we can help each other to do better with what we have. And these are conversations that, people don't always go to,
No,
even
no.
in their families and in
Yeah,
their homes. And
yeah.
I hope, when we have these chats, we can spark something in somebody to just take one step. And if we can get one person each time we chat,
We've done
it's something
enough.
to be grateful for. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Have a lovely evening.
Excellent. A lovely evening to you too. Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye. And good.
That was this week's edition of Personal Finance Monday, everybody. Let's do it again, same time next week, with more wisdom, more bold moves, and more reasons to believe in our financial power. And with that, I am Nompumelelo Mbonane, and I hope you have just made sense of your business. Fresh mercies tomorrow. Ciao for now.
Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.